Welcome to the Becoming Eva podcast, where we discuss real life issues from a woman's perspective.
Becoming Eva seeks to break the silence within the female community while fostering authenticity, transparency, and healing.
We're your hosts, LaToya Moore
and Maya Dawson.
Let's get started.
Hey! Happy Saturday, BE community!
Happy Saturday.
Whoop, whoop. We have another very special guest with us today. But before we get started, I think we're going to switch it up a little bit. And we're going to do something I want to call roll call. So we're going to ask everybody here, how are you doing on a scale from 1 to 10? Tell us what number you are and why. So I'm going to kick it to you, Toya. Tell us what number you are and why.
I think I'm at a 5.
Okay.
To be honest.
That's real.
Yesterday we had Hispanic Heritage event. That's one of the initiatives that I lead at my school. So we collaborated with another school. So it was a huge event, a huge turnout of families. We had arts and crafts. We had food trucks. We had entertainment, a group called Capora, and I'm probably not saying it with the correct, you know, accent on the correct letters, but it was a Afro-Brazilian kind of like martial arts dance.
Capoeira, that's what it is, capoeira. Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yes. Yes, I kept practicing it yesterday. So they had us out there doing moves. And then we also had a Latin flow dance instructor as well. So it was just a busy, busy day with decorating and setting up and greeting families and all the things. So I was sore when I got home and I woke up sore. And so I'm taking tomorrow off so
good.
I can kind of fool whatever. But yeah, that's why I'm at a 5.
Very good. I'd be at a 5 too, girl. That's a lot. Woo.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Special guest, Natasha, tell us what number you are and why.
Currently, I'm probably at a 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd asked me earlier this week, I'd probably be at a 2 or 3. You know, because my week kind of fluctuates, I'm in the process of, I have several school contracts, which are awesome. However, trying to hire clinicians and get them trained and criminal background checks, and it's just a lot. So I get a little overwhelmed at the beginning of the week. And then as the week progresses, my numbers usually go up. So I would say about a 7 or 8.
Amen. I got you. I'm actually right there with you. I'm going to say I'm a solid 7, though. I'm not a 7 or 8. I'm right at 7. Yes, I can tell the week is, I feel the week. I feel it. It's been a full one. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful because it was a productive week and, you know, and I'm excited about the opportunity to refresh and renew. So that's where, you know, what kind of is keeping me on the positive side of 5. But yeah, definitely feeling the depletedness and excited about the opportunity to be replenished. So yes. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this conversation will not only replenish us, but those that are listening. So
absolutely.
I'm excited. Let's dive in. That's roll call. And we're going to talk what had happened was.
Well, first, did you want to introduce our special guest?
Yes, absolutely. I will read it. Thank you. You could tell I'm not used to being the one to read the bio here. I was like, is it before or after? So thank you, LaToya. I appreciate it. All right. So I'll read the bio of our special guest, who is Natasha Mullen. Natasha Mullen is a dedicated licensed professional counselor and licensed master social worker with over 25 years of experience in counseling, training, and supervision. Natasha is the owner of a thriving counseling group practice in Delaware called Milestones, which offers a wide range of services, including individual, group, school, and telemental health counseling. Wow. Natasha specializes in trauma and anxiety, bringing a wealth of knowledge from hundreds of hours of training and numerous certifications to her practice. In 2004, Natasha, along with her husband, Dr. Julius Mullen, and a group of committed parents, founded Impact Delaware, a community organization dedicated to empowering youth. This initiative includes the unique mentoring program for girls and the Man Up program for boys, both aimed at fostering personal development, resilience, and leadership skills among young people. With her extensive expertise and passion for helping others, Natasha continues to make a significant impact in her community and also her family of four adult children. Her four adult children are Julius Jr., Jawan, Jasmine, and Jayla, and she has six grandchildren, Kyrie, Kingston, Aria, Kamari, Naomi, and Cadence. So let's formally welcome our guest today, Natasha Freshwater Mullen. Woo!
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
How many grandchildren? How many did you list off?
What was it?
How many grandchildren? How many did you list off?
I have six. Yeah, so three of my children have two. Yeah, my youngest in Georgia doesn't have any.
I'm amazed.
Not yet.
Not yet.
You do not look like you have grandchildren at all. So that's amazing.
Oh, yes. Wow. Oh, yeah. Mm. Six. The oldest is 10. The youngest is just turned one.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, let's officially dive into what had happened was, and some of y'all may notice a familiar maiden name here by the name of Freshwater. And Natasha is related to who we like to call our plug, Latrina.
Yes.
She is the older sister, right?
Of Latrina? Yes, the oldest sister. Yes.
Yes.
Latrina's the middle child. Yes.
I love it. So we could, if we wanted to, dish a little bit and get some blackmail stories here, but we're not gonna behave.
Behave, yes.
But if you do, if you'd like to share, because honestly, I remember seeing your name like pop up in our chats, because I know Latrina is a huge advocate and supporter of Becoming Eva. So would love if you have any anything you want to share about what you thought about Becoming Eva when you first were introduced to our podcast.
Yes, I loved it. It was really interesting. I love anything that, of course, speaks to women that is relatable, you know, that people can kind of feel it and say, you know, oh, yeah, that's me, or I've experienced that. And so that's what I felt when Becoming Eva. Like, I think everybody who watches it can identify with part, even if it's, you know, one part or all parts or whatever. I think it was really relatable.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your support. And we're so excited to have you today. So we're going to dive on in and we're going to talk about the origin story.
Sure.
Yes. So we know Latrina, and I want to get to know you in your perspective of what it was like growing up, where you're from. So if you can share with the Becoming Eva audience a little bit about what it was like growing up as a oldest child. You can share a little bit about what it was like with Latrina too.
Sure. Well, what's interesting is me and Latrina are 8 years apart. So when, you know, as she was coming up, you know, I had to kind of be responsible for her sometimes. My mom, there was a period of time where my mom worked at nights. And so I was kind of responsible. I did not do a great job by far, but everybody's alive. Nobody's hurt. Right.
Amen.
But yeah, so, so a lot of that was, so I had, it was such a big age gap between us. You know, when she started school, I was already in, you know, middle school or, you know, or things like that. So, you know, so it was a big difference. It was a big age gap. So our childhoods were a lot different. So for me, when I was growing up or when I was pretty young, there was a lot of dynamics, a lot of family dynamics. We were kind of raised in a home with domestic violence and addiction and, you know, and all of those things. And, but God, you know, because both of my parents are saved now, but, you know, with my grandparents and things like that, a lot of moving and a lot of transition. And things had settled down a lot for Trinka when she got that, you know, when she got older, old enough to kind of know what was going on. So our experiences are a lot different. Not that she didn't experience any of it because she did, but our experiences are a lot different. Our childhoods were a lot different.
Gotcha.
I feel like with the oldest children, and I can relate with my oldest child, like feeling like she didn't have like the total best of us because we were young and trying to figure out the whole parenting thing.
Absolutely. And I think it
comes with being the firstborn.
You're like the test baby.
Test baby. And I apologize to her like all the time.
Yeah.
Because I have four kids and, you know, she gets to see me parent them differently. Especially with Mason being the youngest and he's a boy and they think he's like my favorite and
I think we learn more as we go along. Like I remember with my first son, like I wouldn't even let him crawl on the floor. Like, you know, I was just so overtired. Didn't like people kissing all on them and all of that stuff. And then by the time I had my daughter, I'm like, okay, I don't care what y'all do. Just leave me alone. You know, that kind of thing. So it does change. I think when we learn better, we do better, you know? And so, you know, we just kind of do the best that we can.
Yes, yeah. We do.
Yeah.
So we know that Latrinka is, she has such a servant heart and she serves God so faithfully.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with God and when you started developing a personal relationship with God?
So interesting enough. So once again, like I said, our childhoods were different. So for me, I spend a lot of my time, my teenage and young adult life, kind of running from God. You know, the way I envisioned the religion part of God, I didn't want any part of it.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want any part of, you know, you could only be a certain way. You could only dress a certain way. You could only go here. You could only.
Yeah.
Now, as I'm older, I kind of understand some of the thinking behind it. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it's like not only did I not want any part of it, but I felt like I wasn't good enough. I was like, well, I will never be able to keep up with that stuff. I will never be able to, you know, so I had this feeling like, you know, I'll never be able to keep up with that, you know. Yeah. And so I didn't try. So my thing was kind of, you know, to go the opposite way. It wasn't until I had an illness. And which really kind of came out of nowhere. And the doctors couldn't figure it out. And I remember like laying, you know how when you're in that position, you start bargaining with God, right? So I'm laying in bed and I remember like I could hear my family downstairs and I just couldn't do hardly anything. I was having trouble with speech. I was having trouble like with my sight. It was just like a whole lot. And so I just remember like bargaining with God, like, God, if you help me through this, if you get me through this, I promise that I will follow you. And of course, you know, the doctors figured it out. They figured it out what it was. I started taking medicine. It just kind of like changed overnight.
Wow.
And so, you know, I was so glad in so many ways, but also to learn how much important a relationship was.
Amen.
And that it didn't have to look like what I thought it had to look like.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
How old were you at the time? Like, were you a child? Like, were you a child? Were you an adult? Like, when that?
I was older. So I was probably, I want to say late 20s.
Okay.
Just to 30. Yeah.
A young adult. That's,
yeah. Yeah.
what you're talking about, the whole religious aspect, is so real. I mean, I think that often does kind of scare a lot of people away. Yeah. Or cause them to think they have to get themselves together before they can come to God. And God is like, the exact opposite. Like, I need you to come to me, you know, broken, bruised.
Yes, yes.
Because you can't get yourself together, you know.
You can't do it.
You can't. But I love the fact of how, like, God knows what it takes for each and every one of us to get our attention. And I always call it kind of like hitting a wall. Like, I feel like in life we will all hit walls, you know, and it could look completely different for some. It could be extreme success and you checked everything off your list, but you're still empty. You know, it could be depression. It could be sickness, like what you were talking about. It could be death or whatever, you know, having those major life changes. God can use any and everything to get our attention. And so for you, that just happened to be what it was, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful that in the midst of that, you were able to really find out what it looked like to have a personal relationship with God.
Yes, absolutely.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
And at the time, too, I think I was under this falsehood that, well, as long as I'm a good person, and as long as I'm doing stuff in my community, because we had already started like our youth programming and stuff. And as long as I'm doing all these things, I'm good. You know, I treat people good, you know, and once again, just not understanding the importance of having a relationship.
Yeah, that you hit on something, because I think, especially in the industry that you're in, when it's, you know, when you're dealing with like mental and emotional wellness, oftentimes it's either one or the other, where people are like, I can be healthy and whole because I'm doing therapy or because I'm doing the work inwardly, or on the other end where it's like, I don't need nobody else but Jesus, you know, pray about everything. You know, Christians don't need to go to counseling. Christians don't need to go to therapy. So, like, what did it take for you? I mean, of course, the health challenges, but how were you able to kind of reconcile the two and realize, like, it's a both and, it's not an either or, you know?
Yeah, I think it was through my experience of kind of helping others too. So I think that when I realized, oh, I can do both, like I can talk to my clients about their mental health, and we can also talk about God, and we can also pray, you know. And so I think that was really, you know, because even like I said, I was a counselor at the time, but was very strict about, oh, we can't talk about that, you know, that, you know we can't go there, so to speak. And so to have that ability to be able to bring both together and show how they're all connected, like, not only do you pray and seek God, but you can also seek God for your mental health.
Amen.
And we can also talk about that. And so I think that was, you know, like the aha moment, that it didn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And then I think when I learned that it was my passion to share that with people, you know, to let others know the importance of, it doesn't have to be this or that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're struggling with anxiety, depression, it doesn't mean you're not praying enough, you know, that kind of thing. And just being able to educate other people as well.
That is so good. That is so good. Wow. Yeah. I was going to say, did you have anything you wanted to share for the origin story?
No, it sounds like she is already leading us into the becoming segment. I am curious to know what inspired you about the mentorship portion. Like, was there anything that happened in your life that made you want to create mentorship programs for young men and women?
My whole life, like my whole life story, you know. I had a youth group today, and I love that I can be transparent when they see kind of, you know, when they hear the stories and they hear some of the things, some of the challenges, the feeling of not being good enough, the feeling of feeling like you're out of place and things like that. Just kind of knowing what that felt like and feels like. It's interesting because I was thinking about that earlier. It really started, I used to teach parenting classes.
Oh, wow.
And I taught parenting classes. Oh, wow, is right. Especially when I tell you the second part. I used to teach parenting classes to parents who had to get classes or they would lose their benefits.
Mm.
So let me tell you, they didn't come in happy campers. They did not come in. They did not want to be there. They would look at me side-eyed, rolled their eyes, whatever you know, however you think they would show up. That's how they showed up. And so it really taught me to put the manual away. We had this big, thick manual. And I'm like, oh, I ain't going to start with them with this manual. That you can cancel that right now. And I learned, I think that's where I really learned my skills, because I learned that these people, you know, that sometimes we write off or we try to put in a box, they have real stories.
Yeah.
They have real experiences. They, you know, and I learned to, you put away the manual and you learn how to relate. You learn how to relate. You kind of meet them where they were. And it just kind of extended to my work with youth. So when we started, Impact, at that time it was called SPEAK, Supporting Parents for the Education of African American Kids. We started it because of a situation I had with my son where he needed special ed at the time. And me not understanding, not navigating, not knowing what my rights were, even though they give you this whole pamphlet of information. And I remember that day leaving from the IEP meeting, and I called my friend. I was like, I have a master's degree, and I'm struggling understanding what they were talking about. I can only imagine how other parents feel. Since we got together, and we decided we were going to educate parents about how to advocate for their children.
Amen.
And so that's where SPEAK came from. And then once we started meeting with parents, we realized that one of the biggest things was that their children didn't have like mentorship. Like they didn't have things where they came together, like positive things to do. And so that's where me and my husband started Unique and Man Up. It later became a nonprofit when we moved beyond Seaford, which was where we started the program at. And that was when we decided to name it Impact Delaware instead of Seaford Parents. And so, yeah. And so that's kind of how the mentorship program actually started.
Wow.
It's just a conversation, me being frustrated with, you know, the way that I felt like in that meeting. You know, it's around all those people looking at me. I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I got all these papers. I'm nodding, going along with whatever they're saying. And actually, I was in Essence magazine for that. I keep forgetting. That actually came to my son's school and did a piece on advocating for children.
That's amazing.
And now he has his doctorate degree.
Wow.
It just shows you, you know, the importance of advocating and being there. And I wanted to show parents who sometimes had traumatic experiences in schools. It's hard for them to walk in the building, much less sit in a meeting. And we wanted to advocate and teach those parents how to advocate and be comfortable with advocating for their children. That's how it started.
Oh, that's incredible.
I think that is so important. In the education world, if you're not in it, and I am in the education world, I think it's hard to understand the lingo and all the terminology. And when you're sitting in those IEP meetings and they're talking to you about all the modifications and accommodations and your rights, if you are not in the education world, how foreign that can sound. And then there's even language barriers, because you know you have Hispanic families and all kinds of different languages that that people speak, and you know their students may need accommodations. It's just very hard, and I think that is needed for parents to know how to advocate for their children. Absolutely. Now, when they know that you're an educator, they normally send in like the big guns, because you know we know our rights. We're not gonna let you just do our kids any kind of way. So
I think
now power, and it definitely should be shared with other parents so that they know how to advocate for their children.
Absolutely. The teachers, they used to get so sick of me because when my son had an IEP, I would say, okay, you're supposed to be sitting in a certain space, you know, and I would ask, you know, are you sitting there? And he would be no. I said, okay, well, I got to write another letter to them. And I would ask him, so when you handed your teacher my letter, what did she do? Did she roll her eyes? Did she take a deep breath? Like, I wanted to know all the details, because it wouldn't take much for me to fly out there and never, you know, with the argumentative or fussing or anything, but just, you know, help me understand how we can make this work. Mm-hmm. And taught parents, like, it's not us against them. It's we're a team. And how can we make this work? You know, how can we make this better for, because if we can help him, that's going to help you, because he's not going to be acting out in school, you know? And so that's what it was. It was not like a us against them. It was like, how can we work together as a team kind of thing?
Yeah, that partnership piece is so important. Like, oh, wow. So that was 20 years ago that you started Impact.
Yes.
And before that, it was Speak, right?
Yeah, it was Speak in 2004. We applied. We actually made it a nonprofit about 7 years ago, and that was when we changed it to Impact Delaware.
Okay, amazing. So now you just said your son, the son that sparked the whole thing, now has his doctorate, correct?
He has his doctorate. He's working in the same school he caused havoc in.
Oh wow!
He's a social worker. And he also does Man Up, one of our mentoring groups with the high schoolers.
Talk about full circle. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yes.
That's actually what I was going to ask. Well, first of all, I love the fact that the mentoring program is for young women and young men, like, because honestly, both need mentoring in different ways. And it's just so important to have role models, you know, for both genders to look up to. So what can you share, like, some of the topics or subjects or aspects of the mentoring program that are addressed or included?
Sure. A lot of it is I'll just say, like, we have a creed. And so one of it is being our own individual. We talked about that today. You know, not giving into peer pressure. Sometimes you have to stand alone and it can be lonely. Yeah. Sometimes you have to say no to some people, you know, cause we got a lot of people pleasers. The important, like yesterday, one of our groups was about modeling, especially if you got younger siblings. What are you showing them? How are you modeling for them? What are they seeing when they see you? You know, I had one girl that, you know, she said that she used to fight until she saw her sister. Her younger sister was starting to fight. And so it made her stop because she didn't want her sister to go down the same road as her. We talk about, one, understanding emotions. We talked a lot about that yesterday, as far as like easy emotions, like happy, sad, but then the harder ones like embarrassment, guilt, shame, resentment was a big one we talked about. So we talk about, you know, and so not only understanding our emotions, but also how to express them. How do you express them appropriately? You know, unfortunately, also having to prepare them for, they might not get the response that they would hope for when they express them. You know, sometimes we think that I encourage the teens to have these conversations with parents or friends or whatever, and sometimes the outcome isn't what they hope for. And so, you know, preparing them for that. We talk about gratitude and being thankful. You know, who in your life, you know, do you appreciate? Who in your life do you trust? So it's a lot of different topics. We definitely talk about social media.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you intake?
Yes.
Being very mindful of how it affects you, affects your mood. You can't help but compare yourself. You can't help but be jealous. And for long times appearance like that, that leads to depression, that leads to anxiety. So we talk about that. I touch a little bit about dress.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a touchy one because the parents sometimes let them dress however, and you know, so that's a touchy one sometimes. So just kind of, you know, how do you want people to look or think of you kind of thing? Because a lot of times they just do it because everybody else does it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll see them, you know, sometimes they're pulling their their short shirt down, you know, because you can tell they feel a little uncomfortable, you know, because it's not really them. It's still, you know, kind of fit in with what everybody else is doing and wearing and things like that. And so, yeah, so that's a lot of it. Anger, managing anger. What are your triggers? How do you manage through it? What's a good way to respond? We talked today a lot about being dealing with people who are passive aggressive.
Wow.
Which is really hard for me. So I share a lot.
You need to help me with that because I deal with a lot of passive aggressive people on my job. So
oh my God. And that's what I told them. I said, this is not just a high school thing. I said that today. When you, wherever you go, when you go to work, when you go to college, in military, whatever your next steps are, you're going to deal with people that are going to throw rocks at you and then hide their hands. And then they're going to say you overreact and you're too much, you're too sensitive, you're too. And we kind of role played that out, you know, what that's like. So we talk about a lot of stuff. I call it like real life stuff.
Wow.
We talk about a lot of real life stuff.
Yeah.
I share a lot of like my clients, you know, not giving out too much information, but a lot of things that they deal with even as adults, because I work with a lot of adults in my counseling practice. And so we talk a lot about, you know, I talk a lot about those situations as well, especially with trust and having your guard up and being afraid to be vulnerable with people and all of that. So we talk a lot about everything. It's just like a girls talk session.
I love it.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll go in with a whole agenda and we won't talk about none of it because they'll have something like a pressing issue, like this whole P. Diddy thing. Like we had to go there because they're getting inundated with triggering information all day long and all night, just triggering stuff. So we had to talk about that. Like, how are you managing and processing all of this information? Because it's a lot. You know, it's a lot to just hear, and some of them are watching videos of it, and you know, it's just a lot. And so we talk a lot about that as well. Whatever, you know, they're experiencing in the moment, we go there.
Amazing. And so necessary, like to have a safe space where you can talk about real stuff, you know, growing up, but shoot, as an adult, you need that too. So that's amazing that you're helping to lay that foundation.
Yeah.
Is it year round and for what ages?
So interestingly enough, some of my girls that still are involved are actually in college.
Oh, wow.
I have a young lady who's a senior this year that actually started with me in fourth grade.
Oh.
So yeah, it's going to be hard for me when she graduates, but yeah, so we try to follow them up. So during COVID, we tried to do it online. It didn't work. They were all Zoomed out because they were getting school from Zoom. So after COVID, we had to kind of start out fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So now my girls that are in 10th and 11th grade were actually my girls I started with in middle school when I had to start all over.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we try to follow them up. And it's so interesting. So I had a community group. So I have an elementary school group, a middle school, a high school group, and then I have a community group for girls who are not, that does not attend that school, but live in close communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was so great because two of my first unique girls showed up to my community group. And they spoke to the girls. So they're about 30.
That's amazing. They spoke
to the girls and they told them, you know, how great the program was and how it helped them and where they're at now in their life. And so Christmas break, when my college girls are off for Christmas, I'm going to bring them in and talk to some of my girls that are now in middle school and high school. And so it's just supposed to be like a lifelong sisterhood.
Yeah.
Is what we hope for.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And for them to hear from other women that have come through the program as well. That's beautiful.
And you know what? Because I've been doing this so long, one of my unique girls' daughters is in the group.
Oh, yes.
Yes. One of my girls that was one of my first girls, her daughter is now in the group. So that gives you an idea of how long I've been doing this. It's been 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you started the nonprofit over 20 years ago, and then you went out. You at the time were, from what I understand, practicing with another, as a counselor for another company or agency. Mm-hmm. And then you branched out and started your own agency in what, 2017?
Yes. Yes. So I started kind of like part-time at first. I started like with evenings, and then I expanded to full-time. And now I have like 8 clinicians that also go into the schools, or they do telehealth. So it just kind of expanded over the years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you specialize in working with youth. Like, do you work with adults as well, or do you focus on youth primarily?
Yeah. So the groups that I do in schools is kind of my only youth. Mm-hmm. I usually work with more adults. Okay. When I actually started my private practice, my goal was to work with adults because I felt that that would have the most impact on kids. But, you know, because it was such a need for youth counseling, I expanded to youth as well. But most of my clients are adults.
Okay.
Outside of the groups I do in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've been in counseling for a long time. And my mom is also in the counseling field as well. So I know, like, the stress mm-hmm. of hearing other people's burdens and troubles. Like, how do you replenish yourself from taking on and hearing other people's drama? Like, what do you do to kind of reset? Do you also like seek a therapist, or what do you do for your mental health after talking to so many people about all of their problems?
So self-care is definitely a big thing. And I think we recognize that during COVID more than anything, because not only were we completely stressed out, but our clients were stressed out, our families were stressed out, like everybody was just on 100. Yeah. But definitely self-care, because I do trauma, we have been taught, and I try to practice doing something between sessions. Just with either deep breathing, usually it's prayer, mm-hmm. sometimes just kind of walking out, getting some fresh air, making sure I'm drinking water, so I'm going to the restroom. But then you also do, like, I try to get massages regularly. I try to clock out completely, compartmentalize. You know, one of the things too, just be spiritual. I have to realize that I am not God,
mm-hmm.
and that God is in control.
Amen.
And it's not my job to fix it, because sometimes I think that's what makes client counselors burn out, is because they get so overwhelmed with trying to fix it. But it's not my job to fix it. Amen. My job is to help them navigate their own stuff so that they can see the changes or what they need to do differently. But it's in God's hand. And I think that allows me a lot to remind myself. And sometimes I have to say that to myself constantly, that mm-hmm. God is in control. God can handle this. I don't want to be prideful and think that I have to fix this problem, because I don't. And so sometimes that helps me kind of compartmentalize so that I'm not carrying it into other parts of my life when I'm supposed mm-hmm. to be clocked out and mm-hmm. with my family or in other spaces.
Yeah. That's so interesting to hear you use the word compartmentalize. I feel like sometimes people can look at it as being positive, and sometimes people can look at it as mm-hmm. being negative. And I mean, depending on the scenario, it probably could be either or, but I guess, How do you know when you're compartmentalizing in a healthy way versus a non-healthy way?
So I'll be honest, during COVID, I almost became numb.
Mm-hmm.
I think I compartmentalized too much, you know, because, you know, as so many people were getting sick and they were dying. And so it'd be like, oh, such and such died. And I'd be like, you know, it was almost like I had clocked out.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of the unhealthy way to compartmentalize, because it's almost like you're kind of numb. You're not even feeling any emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're supposed to feel it. You know, a lot of times it's hard for us, but we are supposed to feel hard things.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of addiction comes from, because people try to not feel. Mm-hmm. Like, we're supposed to feel some things. So mm-hmm. I think that's where it becomes unhealthy, is when we kind of disconnect from our emotions.
Got it.
And we become numb.
Whew. That's good. That's really good. I wanted to ask too, I know you talked about how COVID, you know, just kind of revealed that we all need to, you know, exercise mental health in some way, shape or form. And I literally was just thinking this week, like anxiety can run rampant, or I feel like has run rampant in our lives since COVID, I think for a myriad of reasons, because of literally the trauma that we experienced and are still recovering from during COVID, but then also just as we started to reintegrate back into society, you know, things look and feel different, you know, and in a lot of cases they are different. And so I know for me personally this week, I was literally thinking about like, at times I can suffer from like social anxiety where I feel anxious about having to engage with people like in person, in public, in groups, in crowds, like, and it really took a minute to dawn on me because I was like, oh my gosh, like this is real.
Like, this absolutely is real. Absolutely. If you think about COVID, and this is how I explain to teachers as well when they're dealing with kids, like for almost 2 years, we thought that people can make you sick and people can make you die. Stay away, 6 feet, back up. And then all of a sudden, okay, everything's good. Go back to normal. Yeah. And so, you know, we didn't get a chance to kind of like reintegrate back into the world. I don't know about you, but if I go in Walmart and I don't see paper towels, I'm like, what's going on? Do I need to check the news? You know, because we can be triggered.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than COVID. If you think about during COVID, police brutality.
Yes.
Was crazy. I don't know if it's because people had more time, so they were really locked in on it because they were home. Yeah. Politics, political anxiety is a thing.
Yep.
Social media, like we're so inundated with anxiety provoking stuff.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I remember when I used to take my kids to the mall, it was like, okay, we're going to be here such and such a time. Y'all meet in front of Old Navy by 8, right?
Yep.
You can't do that now. I can't do that now. People are just making these crazy choices. You know, it's like, oh no, y'all come, you know, stick. I don't want them right under me because I don't want them to feel. But no, with my grands, y'all are with me. We're all going to go there together. No, you don't go to the bathroom by yourself. We're all going to go together. You know, it's just people, you know, and it's so. It's an anxiety provoking world right now. So it makes sense why we're so more anxious than before.
So what are some just basic tips or practices that you can share? I know you talked about like between sessions, just maybe taking some deep breaths or something, but like, what are just some basic tips or practices that you can share for people that, as we're navigating this anxiety in whatever way, shape, or form, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's basic things like, you know, relaxation. Sometimes people meditate, which meditate can also be like, you know, when I say meditation, people think I'm talking about, and I'm not talking about, you know, that, but sometimes it's just learning how to relax your body. Learning how to relax your muscles, whether it's just meditation music or it's relaxation, things like that. Sometimes it's hard because I'm just a naturally anxious person. So sometimes it's hard for me to relax. I'm more of a movement person.
Yeah.
So walking, exercising, you know, even like I said, it's just walking out to get fresh air. I would say some of the major things with taking care of yourself, though, is making yourself a priority. I think that's the biggest thing that we don't do. It's like if our children had to be to volleyball practice, or if they had to be to, or if we had to be to Bible study, or if we had to be wherever, doctor's appointments, everything, we'll make sure that everybody's where they need to be. We'll make sure that we show up. We're usually there on time unless something happens. But when it comes to us, we always say we don't have time. Some of us even feel guilty for doing stuff for ourselves. for saying no is another big one. Setting boundaries. Oh, I can't do that. You know, I have to teach, especially, you know, my Christian clients, like when before you say yes, just pause for a minute. Think about it. Like, does this really need to be a yes? Look at your schedule. Look at your week. Don't just say yes, all of us. Like, really take some time, because sometimes we put so much on ourselves that it becomes overwhelming. And then we're like, oh, why did I say yes? Now I got to do it. I got to commit, you know? And so sometimes it's just being able to say no. Sometimes being pausing and thinking first before you give that yes. Setting boundaries is a big one.
Yeah.
And sometimes it means setting boundaries with family. Unfortunately, yeah. That's a lot of my work, is how to set boundaries with families, especially if the family's toxic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to protect yourself in situations, walk away from some situations, get off the phone, not hang up, but just say, okay, yeah. Mom, I gotta go. If it's mom, you know, but taking care of yourself, checking in with yourself to see how you're doing. You know, what's interesting is as soon as I have a client that's anxious or depressed, the first thing I ask them is, how much are you on social media?
Mm. Wow.
How much are you on social media? Take a fast. See if you notice a difference.
Amen.
Because you know, think about us being inundated with stuff all the time. And some of it's good and some of it's funny. You know, my friend's in Jamaica. Well, I'm going to be in Jamaica. I'm at work. You know, she's fit and trim. Well, I need to lose 20 pounds. You know, we can't help but compare.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just too much for our brains. It's just too much for our brains. So it makes us anxious, and sometimes it leads to depression.
Mm. Wow.
So I would say social media is a big one.
That's a huge one. That's a very huge one. And fasting social media is real. Like, that is real. Like, just stepping away, taking a minute. If you need to let your followers know, let them know. But take a minute. Like, literally take a minute. Or if you're doing a fast period, maybe including social media in the fast so that you can use that time to recalibrate and refocus. So that's huge. That's very huge.
Some people can fast food all day. But you talk about that phone. Cutting off TikTok and Facebook and Instagram.
Come on.
Well, sometimes our brain needs those breaks, because what happens, some people do it especially at night before they go to sleep. So when they fall asleep, they're not reaching that healing part of sleep that heals the brain because their brain activity is still going. The brain is still on 100 even though they're asleep.
That's so good.
Yeah. So sometimes it's good to shut down, like, you know, they have a rule of thumb at least an hour before you go to bed, like disconnect from social media.
Yeah.
Or news or what, you know, whatever. I had one of my clients that watched the news all the time. Like, she literally had it in her ear, listening to it all the time. She had to know why do you need to know what's going on in Africa? Nothing against Africa, but let's focus on where we're at today. You know what I mean? But she would have it playing in her ear all the time. And when she was so anxious, and every time I talked, she said, did you know that this happened? Did you know? And I'm like, no, because I don't watch the news. Mm. So I didn't know that, you know, it's something different to want to be informed and to be inundated with information.
Yeah. I had one more question that you sparked before I turn it over to you, Toya. I know I'm hogging it for a minute, but I wanted to ask, when you mentioned family and you mentioned boundaries, I thought about the fact that the holidays are coming up, and the holidays can be triggering for people in a lot of different ways, for a lot of different reasons. If they have estranged relationships, or if they have trouble, you know, setting boundaries with their family, or if, you know, somebody's dealing with grief and, you know, having lost a loved one, and, you know, holidays can just trigger a lot of different things. So I just was curious to know if there were any tips or words of wisdom that you would give as we are preparing to head into the holiday season.
Yeah. So actually, it's interesting, because sometimes that's where I get actually a lot more referrals, is usually around the holidays, because you're right, it's really hard for a lot of people. The key is to know what your triggers are. Mm. So for instance, if it's a specific person, which sometimes it is, or you know that person may say something that's going to kind of take you there, or trigger you, I always ask, so how are you going to take care of yourself? Like, do you need to go to the bathroom and take some deep breaths and do some self-talk or pray? Like, how are you going to show up for yourself in those moments? You don't have to sit there and let someone humiliate you or embarrass you or say a joke that's not really a joke or come at you. Or, you know, you have the right to remove yourself from that situation, whether it is going to the bathroom to get yourself together, whether it is, hey, I might need to leave to protect my own, you know, mental health. Like, you have the right to do that. And so I always say, especially some of them already know, they kind of already know the kind of who's and what's going to be said, how things are going to jump off or whatever. So we kind of prepare ahead of time. We kind of develop a plan of action of, okay, so what are we going to do? We already know what's going to come, how it's going to come. What's the plan? How are we going to take care of ourselves in those moments?
Wow. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And even with grief, like sometimes, of course, grief is a big thing. So we also talk about that. Like, so how are you going to celebrate? What are you going to do that day? Is it a day that you might need to stay super busy? You might need to be around friends that day. Like, or you might decide that, you know what, that day I'm just going to stay in my bed and cry. That's great too. It doesn't have to look a certain way. You know, some people, especially us, we don't want to cry. We don't want to be sad. We don't, but that's a part of it.
Amen.
That is a part of it. We might stay in bed and we might cry, but I bet you you'll get up.
Amen.
You'll wipe your tears up and you'll keep moving. Like, it's okay to have those times. Allow for those times. I used to have clients that I used to say, okay, this is the time we're going to schedule out for you to cry.
Yeah.
You have to release it. You can't just keep going on like this isn't bothering you.
Mm.
So when that time comes, you go ahead and you have your good cry.
Mm-hmm.
You go ahead and you have your good cry. Holding space. We've dismissed our feelings for so long. We've minimized our feelings for so long. Mm. We've told, shake it off. Keep it moving. You don't have time to cry. You know, we've been told that. And so holding space for your emotions is a real thing.
Wow.
It's a real thing.
This has been so good. You have dropped so many gems and nuggets of wisdom and so many different areas that you touched on. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We have a segment that's called Noble Character. Mm-hmm. On Noble Character, we typically let our guests get a chance to recognize a woman of noble character that has inspired you, perhaps on your journey to creating impact or mentorship program or getting into the counseling industry. Someone that is doing something amazing in their community. So we want to give you a chance to recognize a woman of noble character.
Okay. Well, I have two. Okay. And I'll tell you why. And I'm not just saying this because she's my sister. But Latrinka is definitely someone I admire. And she does things so easily. She, you know, we'll be standing beside each other and somebody will say something, an issue or problem they'll have, and she'll say, oh, well, I'll do. And I'm thinking, why didn't I think of that? Like, she's always two steps ahead of me. Like, her the way she thinks and how she shows up for Becoming Eva is how she shows up for her church, how she showed up for her church here, how she showed up for Impact. Like, she used to drive an hour and 15 minutes just to do an hour with my girls.
Wow.
Like, that's her.
Yeah.
She inspires me because she's like that with everything.
Mm.
Her work ethic, her church family, like, she's always 150% with everything she does.
Wow.
I find myself always saying, like, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I think of that? And I'll say that the second person, because she's got it honestly from my mom.
Oh,
same way. You know, when you talk about a serving heart, a genuine serving heart that doesn't need recognition, in fact, don't want recognition, it's my mom and my sister. I just want, like, sometimes I'm just like, wow. I get, you know, amazed at how thoughtful and considerate they both are.
Yeah.
You know, so I would definitely say the two of them, I'm glad that I'm glad that they're in my life, because they don't know how much they remind me of how to be a servant. How to be a servant. Because I can do what I like to do or what I want to do all day long. But to really do something that might not be convenient, that might be me going out of my way, they are such great models of people that go out of their way to help anybody. Like, and I'm, like I said, not just because that's my sister, my mom, like, truly, you could ask 30 other people and they'll say the same thing about them both. So I would definitely say the two of them, I admire dearly.
Can you tell us your mom's full name?
Star Freshwater.
All right. So Latrinka Freshwater, you are a woman of noble character. And Star Freshwater, you are also a woman of noble character. So we have two.
Yes.
Congratulations on being women of noble character.
We definitely deserve it.
We have seen you in the chat as well. So shout out to you for supporting Becoming Eva. We are honored to acknowledge you as a woman of noble character. So
thank you. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Natasha. Sure. This was amazing.
Yes, I loved it. I enjoyed it. Yay. Yes, it was really fun.
I love it. Well, you all, another one for the books. I hope y'all enjoyed it. Rewind it, get those nuggets, get those gems, pick them up, put them in your, implement them, apply them in your lives, because they're just so important. We don't make ourselves a priority enough, like you mentioned, and we don't exercise mental and emotional wellness as much as we should, especially in this day and age where it is so necessary. So thank you so much for sharing your journey and giving us some tools along the way, some things that we can implement on our journey as well. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. And BE crew, don't forget to get your merch at becomingevatoday.com. Get your dresses, your shirts, your mugs, your water bottles, all things on our website. And as always, we are trying to increase our YouTube channel subscribers. So be sure to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe to Becoming Eva. Also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X.
Yeah. And
we'll see you guys next time.
Bye. Awesome.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Click subscribe on YouTube and subscribe to the podcast.
Check us out at becomingevatoday.com
or email us at evamail@becomingevatoday.com.
See you next time.